the best way to serve turkey?
Join the Turkish army.
Yeah.
Are you going to see Arsenal on Saturday?
No, I'm not.
Why?
They didn't come and see me when I was rotten.
Bobo!
Knock, knock!
Who's there?
Marion!
Marion who?
Marion, old bag like you, you've been lucky.
Knock, knock!
Who's there?
The little old lady.
Little old lady who?
I didn't know you could yodel.
What is the difference between a duck?
Neither. One of its legs is both the same.
And remember, be very careful when you cut your hedge. I was lopping my hedge with big shears when my neighbor put his head through to say peep bo. He only got as far as peep.
Girls, when you see this film at your local Odeon, better take a hanky with you. The seats are filthy.
You saw Lawrence of Arabia. You saw Dr. Zhivago. You saw The Dirty Dozen. You saw The Battle of Britain. You go to the pictures a lot, don't you? Do you remember that little village?
Yeah.
That quaint old pub with ivy clinging to the porch. She never could take her liquor.
I'm afraid I shall have to give you an emergency operation. Have you eaten today?
Yes.
Good. I hate working on an empty stomach.
That's it. That's the sound we want to hear. Lots of lovely laughter and applause. It's the BBC Light Entertainment Department's job to make listeners laugh and be happy. And how they go about it is the subject of this little chat. The chat is illustrated partly from Gramophone Records and Archives, and partly from Graham Garden and Joe Kendall in person. Now, are you all sitting comfortably? We can soon do something about that. Now, everything in radio has happened fairly fast. Radio isn't quite as new as television. Well, mine isn't, anyway. But in its history, particularly the history of its comedy, we're dealing with a period of only 35 years. A lot has happened in that time to comedy, but the most important change has been the development of a style of humorous presentation that wouldn't work anywhere else. Good radio comedy won't work on the stage or television or in film. Now, in the very early days, radio comedy merely reflected the music hall theatre of the time. Now, some of you may not remember what music hall humour was like. Most of you, by the look of you. So, here are Graham and Joe with a few examples of old music hall style jokes.
I say. Have you heard the one about the man who got on the bus?
No, I have not heard the one about the man who got on the bus.
What a happy coincidence. Well, there's this man, you see, and he got on the bus.
On the bus.
And he said to the conductor,
yes.
Are you going to clap 'em? And the conductor replied, only if they're very good.
Very good. I say, why do bees hum?
I do not know why do bees hum.
Because they don't know the words.
Thank you. And kindly leave the stage. And very probably the profession, too. I'm not sure how much that helped the history of radio comedy, but it's fun. Now, the music hall wasn't just comedy. It contained acts of many sorts. Variety, it was called. And what is now called Radio Light Entertainments was once called the Variety Department. In the radio counterpart of music hall before the war, one would hear a varied selection of performers, singers, musicians, and comedians, each doing an act in front of an audience, an act written not specially for radio, but for the theatre. I don't think they had jugglers and conjurers on the radio, but apart from that, what you'd hear on the radio wasn't so different from what you'd see in the music hall. But different forms of radio comedy were emerging even before the war. One of the earliest shows to use little sketches, especially written for radio, in between the variety acts, was a show called Bandwagon, which featured Arthur Askey and Richard Murdoch. In one regular feature, Arthur and Dickie were supposed to be living in a flat right on top of Broadcasting House in London, with various other characters like Lewis the Goat and a lady by the name of Nausea Bagwash. The show sounds a little bit slow and strange now, but they were doing some important groundwork for the future of what we call situation comedy, And situation comedy is some people all together in a predicament. And how that... Oh, this is all a bit boring. More jokes!
I once had a friend who was a very brave man. When he was only a boy, he put his right arm in the mouth of a wild crocodile. Think of that, his right arm. My old friend is listening today. I just want to say to him, best of luck, Lefty.
Dear Aunt Penelope, 5 years ago I wrote asking how to control my eldest son, signing myself mother of five. You'll be pleased to know that I took your advice and the home is peaceful once more. Signed, Mother of Four.
Recipe, how to make oxtail soup. First catch your ox, then back him slowly into a saucepan of hot water.
That's enough of that. Where was I? Oh, yes. Development of radio programs just before the war. Another show that got going in this period was ITMAR. Now, that's not a four-letter word in a foreign language. It's the initials of It's That Man Again. And the man in question was a comic called Tommy Handley. When war came, ITMAR became a national institution. Everybody listened to ITMAR. It might be a bit difficult for most of you to imagine just how important radio shows were during the war. But there was very little else in the way of entertainment going. And somehow, radio being heard by everybody at the same time gave a feeling that everyone in the country was laughing together in the face of trouble. And the war years saw big developments in all sorts of radio comedy. For a start, there were the programs designed to entertain the troops. These were act shows with people coming on doing their things, but they tended increasingly to contain sketches, which were specially written for radio. Besides the great ITMAR, there were programs like Garrison Theatre, compared by Jack Warner, evening all. A show with the peculiar title of Ack Ack Beer Beer, Navy Mixture, and a program for each of the forces. There was Stand Easy with Charlie Chester for the Army, Eric Barker's Waterlogged Spa for the Navy, and for the Air Force, How Much Are Binding in the Mush, with Richard Murdoch and Kenneth Horne. All of these shows outlived the war and continued to be successful for a year or so. But the biggest effect the war had on radio comedy was filling the programmes with new star names. Amongst the comedians who came straight out of the forces to the BBC auditions were Harry Secombe, Terry Thomas, Frankie Howard, Jimmy Edwards, Peter Sellers, Spike Milligan, Tony Hancock, Max Bygraves, and many, many others too humorous to mention. At the end of the war, radio comedy was pretty well unrecognizable from what it had been before, and it continued to develop its own style. Now, there were roughly three sorts of post-war comedy shows. One sort had no specific setting, but contained a number of items. Much Binding in the Marsh was one of these, and so was a program I wrote with Dennis Norden for about 40 years called Take It From Here. In Take It From Here, we had an item with two regular characters who were permanently engaged. They never succeeded in getting married. They were called Ron and F. This is how Ron and F first met.
You know, I hope you don't mind my saying this, but in the pictures I could only see you profile. I thought you were much darker skinned.
I'd been eating a choc ice.
You eat a lot in the pictures, don't you? I could hear.
Only mixed nuts and a choc ice and my chewing gum and an apple during the adverts.
I like eating in the pictures too.
Do you?
Oh yes, except a Bette Davis.
I've never tasted one of that. What's your favourite flavour of the month?
Oh, Neil Lopperton.
That's mine too.
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that strange? There's me just happening to find your cap, and then it turns out we both like Neil Lopperton ice cream. Sends a shiver up your spine, doesn't it?
If you have enough of it.
By the way, I don't believe I mentioned it. My name's F.
F.
How about yours?
No, mine isn't.
Let's see if I can guess what your name is. You look like a a Charlie to me.
My name is Ron.
Oh, that's nice. It's masculine, isn't it?
No, it's glum. Ron Glum.
Oh, well, Ron, I mustn't miss my bus. I'm afraid I must be off.
Oh, no, eh?
No.
Stay a bit longer. Wait till Dad comes before you be off.
Take It From Here contained a mixture of regular items and also odd sketches and routines, which were built around the personalities of the three stars, Jimmy Edwards, Dick Bentley, Joy Nichols, which later was June Whitfield. The same sort of setup as more recent counterparts in shows like Round the Horn. Now, the second direction in post-war comedy was towards the development of just one situation throughout the whole program. Early shows of this sort were Meet the Huggetts, Life with the Lions, Raise a Laugh, Life of Bliss. A typical recent situation comedy written around one specific setting is The Navy Lark. Now, a third sort of show, which doesn't need to be either a sketch show nor one situation in a situation comedy, is a show which is devised to project and develop one comedian's talent. In these shows, the actual shape of the program is unimportant. In fact, it frequently changes around. What is constant is the unique comic talent of the star. Perhaps the greatest of these vehicles for huge talent was Hancock's Half Hour. Of all the programs which helped give radio its own sense of humor, the most original and the most influential was The Goon Show. Yes, indeed. There was nothing quite like The Goons had ever happened before in entertainment, and comedy has never been quite the same since. The Goon Shows had about them a wild, feckless gaiety, a kind of lunatic anarchy, which was the perfect antidote to the regimentation of the war years and all the queues and coupons of post-war life. I suppose Spike Milligan is the nearest thing we've got in this country to a comic genius. Spike said of the shows that they were impossible to repeat in any other medium than radio. And this is probably partly their beauty. The Goon Shows are pure radio.
Convict Gritpipe Fenn made a strange request today.
Yeah, dear. Do you mind if I sit down?
Well, if a bollard, you sit down.
Thank you.
Make yourself at home.
Yeah, dear.
Treat the cellars your own.
I will.
Needle, not a loo.
Have you any more brandy?
All gone.
Sorry. Do you mind if I have a strange request? It's this. I really want to send
my of course. I'll do it at once.
Never mind, I'll smoke one of my own.
Marvellous, wasn't it? One of the effects of The Goons, of course, has been to make it very difficult to take any radio sound effects seriously. The goon noises have never been equaled, though many shows have benefited from The Goons' experiments. Perhaps nowadays the most radio of our radio comedy shows is I'm Sorry, I'll Read That Again. The title, which is the classic cover-up for a newsreader's boob, has a radio feel. But sometimes, you know, the most unlikely material suddenly becomes radio. A comedy show that ran successfully for many years was Educating Archie with Peter Brough. The Archie in question was a ventriloquist dummy. It's hard to think of a performance less suited to radio than a ventriloquist. I'm not boring you, am I? Hang on a bit. Let's have some jokes.
This week's recipe. How to boil an egg without touching it. First, take a saucepan of boiling water.
Then get a broody hen and place it on the saucepan.
You know, I once met a tribe of people who used fish instead of money.
Fish?
Yes, it was very effective economically, although a terrible mess of the slot machine.
This is the latest thing from Yves Saint Laurent's collection. Everybody is wearing Yves Saint Laurent's clothes.
What does Yves do? Stay in bed?
Scalpel?
Scalpel.
Saw?
Saw. Doctor, the patient's coming round.
Circular saw.
Quick. Quickly. As I was about to say when I interrupted myself, the light entertainment department produces lots of other shows besides comedies, the magazine programs, panel games, some shows of unscripted comedy like Does a Team Think? That's an example of a show without any script at all, just the remembered events and jokes of a selection of well-known comedians. This ad-lib humour is a strength of panel games. The difficulty with a panel game is to find the right balance between playing according to the rules and allowing the personalities of the contestants to come through. A general rule is that the simpler the rules are, the better the show is. I mean, think of the simplicity of series like 20 Questions, Just a Minute, My Word. The games themselves are quite simple. It's the characters of the contestants that makes the programs entertaining. Let's make this program entertaining.
Jokes! I'm the guy who cleaned up Rustler's Gorge in Medicine Hat. I just come down from cleaning up Dodge City.
You must be mighty handy with a six-shooter.
Nope, but I'm a little devil with my brush and pan.
A book that's a must for Christmas. How to Choose a Baby's Name. By Aloysius Jellicoe Vermicelli Brown.
We paired up in twos to learn how to handle live dynamite. I had a very good partner for a time, then he went off by himself.
Thank you. It might be a good moment to take a look at the people who make comedy, the comedy writers and the comedy performers, and who does what. How, you might well ask yourself, when yourself is not doing anything and will listen, how? How does a scriptwriter sit down and write a funny bit? Where does he start? Well, there are as many answers to that as there are scriptwriters, about 14. If there was a simple technique one could learn, then if you sat six writers down and told them to make a joke about a given situation, then they'd all come up with the same joke. Happily, that does not happen. Comedy writers are normal people in many ways. They tend to be kind to animals, pat their wives, sometimes the other way around. But they have one peculiarity. They have their own odd way of looking at life. Almost everything that happens seems to them to be funny. They have a very individual attitude. Only they see things as being funny in that particular way. Consequently, when you sit six writers down and give them something to write about, the likelihood is they'll come up with six totally different bits of comedy. Suppose the postman delivers a strangely shaped parcel to the door, and the lady of the house takes it in and wonders what's in it. If Eric Sykes wrote it, probably Hattie Jakes would be in it. If Johnny Spate wrote it, probably a Pakistani. Richard Waring would have about 10 children in the package. If Spike wrote about it, the parcel would explode. Good comedy comes about by a comic impulse generated by one writer in his mind. It's a thing very special to that writer. However, there are all sorts of techniques, which isn't quite the same thing. Techniques and devices which writers use as part of their professional equipment. Now, the strangest of these is the catchphrase. Now, catchphrases cause much hilarity simply because people recognize them. The phrase isn't funny in itself, but when it's familiar, it seems sort of funny, sort of reassures us or something. In the old days of music hall, performers used to have their own catchphrases, and they'd appear on programs as Robert Bumper Fun Book Morton, Cardew the Cad Robinson, Jimmy That's Your Lot Wheeler, or Hilda, she know, Baker. Such is the potency of the catchphrase that it's difficult to think of a successful radio series that's got by without one. Here's Graham and Joe with some catchphrases from past radio comedy series triumphs.
After you, Cecil. No, after you, Claude. Don't forget the diver.
Can I do you now, sir?
This is Fumph speaking.
Good morning, sir. Was there something?
I don't mind if I do. I won't take me coat off. I'm not stopping. TTFN.
Oh, Ron.
O-F. Do you come here often? Never mind. A. Good idea, son.
Oh, and he was so strong.
The day war broke out. When I was in Sidi Barani. Right monkey. 35 years. Left hand down a bit. I think the answer lies in the soil. A mauve one.
Yes, well, sort of put like that, those catchphrases do tend to leave one pretty cold. On the other hand...
No, not missing a bell.
On the other hand, people laugh at them. Catchphrase has lost a bit of ground in recent years. I suppose its function has been taken over by the phrases and jingles of television commercials. Another device much used in radio comedy is the play on words, the pun. This is a peculiarly English taste. Few other countries bother with puns, and even in this country, a pun's just as likely to be greeted with a groan as a laugh. Take it from here, we're stiff with them, both groans and laughs. Also with malapropisms, those mispronunciations of long words. In those Ron and S sketches, Ron had a father known as Parglum, and he was always getting words wrong. He'd say, well, it's not Ron's actual signature, no, but it's a very reasonable sexy smile. Or give your mother a hand, Ron. She's putting up the new curtains and pelvis. Or they say, Ron, pass F the suggestive biscuits, will you? For examples of the pun proper, one need search no further than, I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Here's a piece made up entirely of puns about food. See how many you can spot.
Who's there?
It's me, Lord Stilton. May I have entree to this joint?
Why, of course. Oh, my lard, you're dripping. You'll be kitching your death of cold.
Thanks. I got caught in the rain, dear.
Come. Toast yourself at the fire. Excuse my cooking apron.
Yeah, you always look a tasty dish, Meg, whatever the dressing.
Oh, you menu. You're always flattering.
No, I mean it. You're a lovely bit of crackling. I could eat you all up.
Oh, can it, Lord Stilton?
Meg, why do you always adopt such a frigid air?
Who are too fresh, they soon go off.
I admit it. In the past, I was a loose liver.
You've certainly got an awful reputation.
Luckily, I've simmered down now. It's only when I'm with you my heart starts boiling over, Meg. Oh, Meg, you drive me off my nut, Meg. Don't... I beg of you, don't give me the cold shoulder.
Oh, you'll get over it. It's just a flash in the pan.
No, lettuce. Get married. I'll beetroot to you to the end I am.
This is so sardine. I'm afraid you're just not my cup of tea.
Oh, you've got a cruel, cold tongue. But all the same, I love the tongue. I love the legs. I love the breast. But this is no time. I suppose the truth is you've got other fish to fry.
As a matter of fact, I have.
Oh.
You see... I'm in love with Police Constable Dick Dangerfield. Yes, I lost my heart the first day I spotted Dick.
Oh, no. The village copper. Use your loaf sugar. He hasn't got a sausage.
I know he only gets a small celery. But I'll run off with him whenever he cares to say go. You're nowhere in the rice.
So you turn me down for a penniless country dumpling.
Well, if I make a hash of things, I'll just have to stew in my own juice, as my ma might say.
Curses, there's someone at the door.
Help! The door is open. Just lift the ketchup.
Hello, hello. There's something fishy going on here. What's cooking?
Dick, my darling.
No, oh, it's nothing, Constable. The lady was just behaving like a custard.
Behaving like a custard?
Yes, getting upset over a trifle.
A trifle? Ha! He nearly made mincemeat of me.
A bit of a hot dog, eh? I've only got two words to say to you, sir. Irish stew.
Irish stew?
Irish stew for assault, a battery, and... disturbing of the peas. How many puns did you get? I got 4. Probably the best sort of comedy. Well, no comedy is better than another, as long as it's funny. But certainly the sort of comedy which is very satisfying to write is character comedy. Comedy which is funny because the man who is talking is the sort of person he is. This can be either subtle comedy or pretty broad stuff. Here's a sample of the latter from Round the Horn.
Hello, anybody there?
Oh, hello, I'm Julian. This is my friend Sandy.
Oh, hello. Today.
Oh, yes. Welcome to our bijou restaurant.
So you're restaurateurs now?
Yes. Oh, yes. We took it up after our success writing about Manjari in the Glossary.
Yes. We're bona viver of your Sunday supper.
Yeah, that's right. He's a sort of inclement Freud, and I'm a sort of germ carrier. Don't do it for the money, of course. It's just to oblige our chums.
Yes.
Get a lot of telly people in.
Yes, Reynard Lothspoon, the choreographer, he's always in. Loves our homey cooking.
Oh, yes. And then there's Pandro Wildebeest, television director.
Mm.
Or producer, actually.
That's right.
Yes. He does all those tough, hard-hitting documentaries about life on the coalface and steel smelting in Sierra Leone.
Mm.
Lives in that little pink cottage round the corner.
Lovely. Always dropping in for dual speciality. Always does. Drops in for it.
Mm. Likes what I do with the herbs, you see.
He does. He does. Jewel and his herbs.
Yes.
Oh. He can do anything with a few herbs. It's a gift with him.
No, shut up.
No, he is. Don't run yourself down. Oh. Don't run yourself down. See his bread poultice. No, he's always denigrating himself, Miss Horn.
Is he?
Yes, don't give himself value.
Don't be strange, Mr. Horn.
No, don't be strange.
Sit yourself down.
Yes.
Now then, what's your fancy?
Well, could I have a vada at your entrees?
Oh, he's golden. Here's the menu.
Yes. Oh, I see you've got lally of lamb on.
Oh, yes. Yes, your lamb's very nice. Or there's your jugged rye. That's some polari for hair.
Oh, yes.
We got it from our special charcuterie.
Ah, charcuterie.
Mm.
Your butcher?
Oh, you think so? Must be the way I've had my hair done.
That piece, Jewel and Sand in the restaurant, was really a combination of character comedy plus jokes. Most shows have a star which is a mixture of several of the comic qualities. Now, here's a piece of Hancock's Half Hour. No jokes here, but lots of character, a simple situation, and wonderfully devised material by Galton and Simpson. Exactly right, as always, for the talents of the superb Tony Hancock. Here he is, waiting the arrival of the man Tony thinks is out to kill him.
They've stopped. The footsteps have stopped. He's outside the door. I'll bluff him. That's it, I'll bluff him. All right, men, train the machine gun on the door. You 15 men, get ready to pounce on him. Have you got the hand grenades ready, Sergeant? Yes, sir. Corporal?
Sir?
Tear gas ready?
Yes, sir.
He's walking into a trap. He doesn't know it. Machine gun crew, are you all ready, sir?
Ah, sir. Yes, sir.
Right, man, he can't get away. If he's got any sense, he'll go back to Durham while he's still got the chance. Have the battalion of paratroopers arrived yet, Sergeant?
They're hidden in the garden.
Stand by. And the minute he comes in, let him have it with all guns. I give in. Hey, nice.
The most recent development in radio comedy technique came from what might be called the university wave. A bunch of lads who came down from Cambridge University and infiltrated into all areas of radio comedy as writers, performers, producers. Their trademark is a kind of wild zest. Here's a typical example. John Cleese's ferret recipes.
ferret fool. You need two ferrets. Take the first one and cut its head off. Then cut off the forelegs and the hind legs. Then cut off the tail. Chop it up, slowly, and throw it in the fire because you don't need this one. Just a warning to the other one that he'd better cooperate. Put the other ferret in the mocking barrel. Then leave the room and dress up as Stanley Baldwin. Enter the room doing your Stanley Baldwin impersonation. If the ferret is fooled, kill it immediately and eat it while it is still fooled. Ferret crumble. Take a very old ferret and sit and wait. And wait. And wait. And wait.
The script of a radio series is usually written only a few days before the show is recorded. Now, it has been known for scripts to be finished on the same day, like this one. In fact, in one notorious series, the writer used to write the second half of the show while the cast was broadcasting the first half. One effect of this short time lag between script and performance, apart from giving the cast and the producer heart failure, is to make possible last-minute references to something in the news. Topical references, as they're called. Another comedy device called for by writers is the funny sound effect.
Seven men snoring.
Well, now, you might be thinking, what with all the styles of comedy which writers can write and all the tricks of the trade they can use to work up their laughs? Where does the performer come in? He can't be all that important. All the performer has to do is stand there and read the stuff and the laughs will come rolling. Don't you believe it? Here's Graham to stand there and read a passage from one of Galton and Simpson's scripts.
Ah, dear. Ah, dear. Oh, dear. Oh, dear me. Oh, stone me. What a life. What's the time?
2 o'clock.
Is that all? Ah, dear. Oh, dear. Ah, dear me. I don't know. I'm fed up.
Now let's hear that piece again. And this time with Tony Hancock breathing life into the words. Sunday afternoon at home.
Ah, dear. Ah, dear, oh, dear. Ah, dear me. Stone me, what a life. What's the time?
2 o'clock.
Is that all? Ah, dear, oh, dear. Ah, dear me. I don't know. Oh, I'm fed up.
Oi.
What?
Why don't you shut up moaning and let me get on with the paper?
Well, I'm fed up.
So you just said.
Well, so I am.
Look, so am I fed up, and so is Bill fed up. We're all fed up, so shut up moaning and make the best of it.
You sure it's only 2 o'clock?
No, it's... 1 minute past 2 now.
1 minute past 2. And the time drag. Oh, I do hate Sundays. I'll be glad when it's over. Drives me up the wall just sitting here looking at you lot. Every Sunday it's the same. Nowhere to go, nothing to do. Just sit here waiting for the next lot of grub to come up. Ah, dear. There must be something we can do. Bill, haven't you got any bright ideas?
No.
That was a waste of time asking, really, wasn't it? Oh, I'm fed up.
Why don't you men go out for a walk while I wash up the dishes?
Why don't you men go out for a walk? Why don't you go for a walk? Go on, up it. Be one less to look at all day. You finished that paper yet?
No.
Well, hurry up. I haven't seen it. I want to know what my stars say.
What are you?
June the 21st.
What sign is that?
The crab.
It says,
Today looks like being a very exciting day.
Well, good luck to him.
Oh, look. It started raining.
That's all we wanted.
You watch, it'll go dark in a minute. We'll have to switch the lights on.
I think I'll go to bed.
You've only been up an hour.
You see what I mean? Performing the written word on radio calls for very considerable talent. But the human voice is extraordinarily flexible. Here is a demonstration of what you can do with inflection, the tone in which the word is spoken. In the following scene, Graham has only been given one word to say, but lots of different inflections in which to say it. The word is, oh.
Charles?
Huh?
Charles, would you like a drink?
Oh.
A whiskey?
Oh.
There.
Oh.
Charles, you remember you said I could borrow the car?
Huh? Oh.
I can borrow it for a while.
Oh.
Charles?
Huh?
Charles, there's something I should tell you.
Huh?
About the car.
Oh?
You know the brakes aren't very good.
Oh?
Well, they're not, and I'm afraid...
Oh.
Oh. Yes, the gatepost. Drove the car into the gatepost.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
No.
There's not much damage. Look, out of the window, you can see.
Oh. Oh. Oh.
Often a change of inflection is at its most effective when applied to very familiar phrases.
Here are the football results. Wolverhampton Wanderers 2, Tottenham Hotspur 8. Arsenal 1, Chelsea lost. League Division 2, Manchester City 3.
And on the same... Yes, go on, give it a minute. Another element of comedy which is supplied entirely by the actor is the use of odd voices. These can be regional accents or class accents or just funny voices. An important thing when using funny accents is to make sure you use the right one for the joke.
Knock, knock!
Who's there?
Gestapo!
Gestapo who?
We will ask the questions!
It doesn't quite have the same impact when the wrong accent's used.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Gestapo.
Gestapo who?
Oh, classy, we will ask the question.
Another very useful contribution which performers can make is being able to do impersonations of well-known voices. These come in very handy in comedy sketches and topical items. May we have a sample, Graham?
Hello, and tonight, this is your life, Joe Candle.
Oh, Heyman, no, I mean, I don't...
Now, Joe, from a very early age, you were a keen radio listener.
Was I?
Of course you were. And from those early days, do you remember this voice?
Hey, hello there, I'm your pal, your...
I don't remember you.
Oh, no, it ain't right, that idiot. Oh.
You don't remember me either.
Well, maybe I does and maybe I doesn't, but I'm not telling you for sure on account of it ain't fit for mortally us who we are. The voice is very tiring.
Thank you, Walter Gabriel. And now, another voice you're going to remember. And I hope I do, too. I'm speaking to you from the top of a double-bottled glue factory. I first met Joe.
Idea who that is.
And I think it would be true to say that I haven't heard from you since you were a very little girl.
It's not true at all.
And now, Joe, your hobbies. Now, we all know you're a great fan of rugby league.
What? I've never heard of it.
So, bearing that in mind, do you recognize this voice?
Well, of course, are we? Roma, received all keys from Roma. A great time, Sierra. Hansler, Remesha, very friendly with young Freddy Wigglesway from Wigan. Quite a lot is our Freddy. Roman. Of course, Wayfield, Trinity, Rochdale, Hornets, that's all you get in.
How does he do it, one asks. He must be in league with the devil. However, the greatest professional skill of a comedian is his timing. That's to say, the speed with which he speaks his line, the pause he takes, the whole rhythm of his delivery. Timing is impossible to teach. Good comedians know instinctively when to go fast, when to go slow, and when to extend a pause almost... unbearably. Listen now to two brilliant timers, Dick Bentley and June Whitfield, in another piece of Take It From Here.
Oh, Ron, he was the most cleverest juggler I've ever seen. It just didn't look possible. Well, what he did was, well, he stretched his leg forward and he took a plain teacup. Know what I mean, Ron?
No, eh?
Just an ordinary teacup, Ron, like you pour your tea into your saucer from.
Oh, I know what you're getting at, eh? A teacup.
Yes, that's it, Ron.
Well,
he balanced this teacup on his foot, and then suddenly he kicked upwards. The cup flew into the air, and Ron, he caught it on top of his head. He caught it and balanced it, Ron.
Bless you, eh?
No, Ron. That was the noise the drummer made. Oh, it was fascinating, Ron. Oh, and he was so handsome with it.
With what, eh?
Well, with being able to kick a teacup from his foot onto his head, Ron. Oh, I quite fell for him, Ron.
I see.
Don't say it like that, beloved. It's just, well, I always admire a man who's, well, deft.
And what makes you think I'm not, eh?
I didn't say you weren't, Ron.
I've heard Dad tell people that I'm deft enough for anything.
Well, there's no call for you to get onto your dignity, beloved. Some people can kick teacups onto their heads and some can't. It's just nature's way.
And how do you know I'm not in nature's way?
Marvellous, isn't it? Well, that's about it. We've tried to tell you with illustrations a little about the history of radio comedy and a little about the techniques of writing it and performing it. But you must remember that there are no rules in comedy. The only value of considering past shows and old techniques is that they give a kind of a firm launching pad to take off into the future. Now, where's the next development coming from in radio comedy? The next breakthrough in technique, fresh approach, new attitude? Well, somewhere now, there is a lad or a girl who sees the world as being an odd, curious, funny sort of place. Sees the way we all behave and talk and pretend as being comical. And he or she will start practicing to be a writer or a performer. And in a year or so's time, he will take radio comedy off again in a new and exciting direction. Whoever he is, he might well be listening to this program, even sitting in this audience. Well, wherever you are, over to you.